This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Dan Gordon. Dan is the administrator for federal procurement policy, at least till the end of the calendar year, at the Office of Management Budget. Dan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
I'm delighted to be here, Roger.
Well, Dan, I think a lot of our listeners know that you're about to make a career change. You're going to be moving over to the George Washington University School of Law, and I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, YGW and what you will be doing there.
It is a career change, but it is not a complete change. I will still be involved in procurement. I'll actually be going back to my roots in two senses. One is I'll go back to law because, of course, as the administrator, I've not been functioning as a lawyer. And two, for a good number of years, maybe 8 or 9 years, I was actually on the adjunct faculty of GW Law School. So I know the law school, and that is one of the big attractions to me to going back there.
And just thinking about, you know, the next generation of government contracts lawyers, from my perspective, they couldn't have a better person and a better teacher, frankly, from knowing you all these years, to join that faculty and to help them. So
you're very kind. I have to tell you, GW Law School has an absolutely unique government contracts program. The fact is that when Ralph Nash and the late Don Sabinick set up that program more than 50 years ago today, no one had even heard of government contracts law. No one knew that it was an area that was worth studying. And now that law school has half a century of history behind it. They've got strong faculty, Steve Schooner, Joshua Shores, Chris Eukins, and the terrific adjuncts. It is a powerhouse of a place, and they've now been joined by Bill Kovacic and Laura Dickinson as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's great. Yeah, it's a great, great school. So now let's turn to your tenure as administrator for federal procurement policy. And, you know, it's just almost exactly 2 years, let's say, since you joined OMB and served in the role as administrator. And, you know, looking back and when you came into the position, you know, what did you see at that time as the biggest challenges and opportunities to make a difference in federal procurement policy?
Well, if I look back, Roger, to mid-2009, when this possibility first arose, if you had asked me then what the major challenges were, I would have told you the number one challenge was helping the acquisition workforce. They had been beaten down, worn down, underinvested in, run down, and every negative word you can come up with since the mid-1990s, sometimes consciously so. You remember that there were days in the 90s, there were years in the 90s, rather, when the Congress was legislating that the acquisition workforce, particularly at DOD, had to be cut back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were faced with the tsunami of spending that was going on under the prior administration, so that the combination of too few people, too little training, and too much spending was, I would have told you in the middle of 2009, was the number one thing that needed to be addressed.
Yeah, and I think, and I don't know what your thoughts on this, but the other part of that tsunami of spending, or the change in spending, I think is also a change in what was being purchased, right? When we think about when I started in government, you know, like the GSA schedules, for example, like 3/4 of what was being purchased was products. Today, you can flip it and say 3/4 of what's going through the schedules is services, and that's a whole different challenge in terms of buying and understanding what you're doing. And you, on top of, the increased tempo of purchases and the cuts in the workforce, the change in what is being bought as a big challenge as well.
Absolutely. Although I need to add one refinement to that, it's not just that we were buying more and are buying more services, but what kind of services. One of the things that made me particularly anxious to join the administration was that the president signed a memo after he'd just been in the White House a few weeks on March 4th, 2009, that talked about the purchase of services in a way that was leading to over-reliance on contractors, so that we were getting services in a way that, in my opinion, was involved outsourcing without any thoughtful process behind it. And it was very unhealthy for the workforce, unhealthy for the government, and really unhealthy for the taxpayers. We were outsourcing instinctively, often without thinking about whether the work that was being done really should be done by federal employees rather than contractors.
Even you talk about the policy on inherently governmental function, I think that's sort of where you're going, I think, here with this. You've just alluded to that concern. Can you talk about, because the policy that came out is a balanced approach, is a thoughtful approach, and just what were the considerations going into it? And, because there are a myriad of stakeholders involved in this. So
I will tell you, there are stakeholders who are not thrilled with the final product. I accept that. But I will tell you that I'm very proud of the way we and OFPP ran that process. We had an open meeting actually before I came on board. We issued a draft policy letter for public comment. We got an enormous number of public comments. We reviewed every comment. We considered them very, very carefully. And then we issued a final one that I think is a testament to our commitment to having open government and to meaningfully considering comments that came in.
And that's a great segue. We could talk a little bit about open government. And my favorite, I have to tell you, as you probably know, my favorite initiative that you launched during your time is the Mythbusters campaign. And just from my perspective, I think it can do more just in terms of, the mindset and on both sides, government and industry, in terms of engaging to try to find solutions to our challenges. Can you talk a little bit about the light bulb moment or when you figured out, hey, we really need to do, and tell the listening audience about the Mythbusters campaign and just that light bulb moment where you said, hey, okay, we need to do something to try to get people to talk to each other.
I'll be happy to. The Mythbusters campaign, for those of you listeners that may not be familiar with it, is a campaign that we in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy began in February, but we're going to be continuing this long after my departure. It is an effort to increase and improve communication between the government and industry. When you talk about a light bulb moment, I can tell you the moment where this specific campaign got crystallized, at least in my mind. And that's when we in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy were working with Vivek Kundra, our former federal CIO, now succeeded by Steve Van Roekel, who is very much following and along the same path on this issue of collaboration and communication. When we were working with the eGov team to understand why so many big IT projects run behind schedule, over budget, underperform, the more we listened, the more we understood that the root cause often lay in poor requirements. And the reason we had poor requirements in our solicitations was that we weren't listening to industry enough. I know the FAR already tells our people to do market research, but you can't do meaningful market research without really getting out there and listening. I learned from my mom, who's 91 years old now, that you learn more from listening than from talking, and we need to do more listening. We need to do talking with industry, too, but we need to be listening to industry.
What's the feedback been like, especially from the acquisition workforce, the federal acquisition workforce?
Yeah, it's good that you put it in terms of especially from them, because I will tell you the industry is really uniformly supportive. From the acquisition workforce, and we spend a lot of our time listening and meeting with the acquisition workforce across the agencies and across the country, I hear a lot of concern. There is some fear. I remember one contracting officer telling me at one of our meetings a few months ago, she said, Dan, I'm nervous. I'm nervous when I meet with contractors. I'm worried I'm going to get in trouble. There'll be a GAO report. There'll be an IG complaint. The lawyers will get on me. The ethics people will get on me. Whatever. She said, I'm very nervous. And my answer to her was, if you need to, take five lawyers from your agency with you to the meetings, but have the meetings. Listen.
Right. Bring
to
me lawyers, right?
Lawyers are your friends.
Yeah. And right now, Dan, we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy, and we'll talk a bit more about the Mythbusters campaign and some of the other challenges over the last 2 years, strategic sourcing, contract duplication. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletic Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Saturday, January 7th versus Colgate at 2 p.m.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Hey, Lucas.
Hello, Angie. You ready for dinner?
Yeah. Hey, is that a new radio for your ride?
Sure is. Went to Walmart for the Pioneer DEH44HD with HD radio built in.
HD radio?
HD radio is digital broadcast radio. Digital sound, new channels, no subscription fees.
From Walmart?
Great values there. Only $120 for a Pioneer HD radio receiver.
Forget dinner. Let's get my car and head to Walmart.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
With the new year comes resolutions, when we resolve to stop snacking and slacking, resolve to start reading and running. This year, resolve to help someone else too. Resolve to support the American Red Cross, because the Red Cross provides hope, help, and compassion not only during disasters, but every day. Resolve to do something that means something. Support the American Red Cross before the new year. Visit redcross.org today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy. And when we took the break, Dan was just starting to talk a little bit about, the reaction of the acquisition workforce, and I know you had some additional thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Roger, I was saying before the break that the fear is one of the impediments or one of the deterrents in terms of the contracting staff engaging in more conversation with industry. There are a couple of others. One is, frankly, that our people are just overworked. It is a burden on our people. And I will tell you that I've relayed this message when I talk to vendors. I say, be sure that when you have increased communication, that the government perceives it as useful. Because enough government contracting officers have said to me that it's gotten my attention. They've said, Dan, we don't want to have a situation where we're forced to listen to marketing campaigns right. that are of no use to the government.
Right.
Overall, I would say that this is a cultural change. It is not a change that's going to happen overnight. But I'm convinced that the push of the Mythbusters campaign for more communication, early communication, honest communication, full communication will pay off for the government, but also for industry.
Picking up on your comment about, you know, the contractors and coming in with their marketing pitches, and I think your point there is right. It's got to be efficient and effective communication. Do you have other thoughts about how contractors can, on the contractor side, they can help improve, you know, the role of and the effectiveness of the communications?
They need to be sure when they have meetings with the government that they bring people to the table that are going to know what's useful to the government. Marketing campaigns is not what we need to hear. We need to hear recommendations about what makes sense in terms of the going forward. We need to hear real information about the company's capabilities.
And, you know, I know you, as we've talked about briefly in the first segment, you are moving on to GW Law School, but you mentioned this campaign is going to continue. How do you see it, you know, sort of going on or growing, or are there other things that are going to be lined up to try to improve the communication?
This is really a campaign of many waves and many dimensions. Let me give you a couple of examples that have already happened. We didn't meet only with one group or one segment of the population. First of all, I raise this with virtually every agency when I'm out there, and obviously Leslie Field, who's going to be our acting administrator in my absence, she and her colleagues will keep going out to the agencies. But in addition, we convened a session or two of procurement lawyers from across the agencies. Very important to have the attorneys and the agencies know what's going on, feel comfortable with what's going on. We convened a meeting of ethics counselors at agencies. And in every case, it's defense and civilian, because we want to get input from everybody. We ourselves want to be listening. Listening is a way to learn. We want to listen from all these different communities, and then we want to continue the outreach again and again and again, sharing examples across the government of how the Mythbusters campaign and the increased communication is really paying off for us in the government.
Yeah, and I think, you know, your point of talking to the ethics officials and the procurement attorneys, especially the procurement attorneys, is, I think, a key to, you know, success of the program.
And that's from a former procurement attorney.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
And
you know
very
where
good
I'm
one.
Coming from. and I just, you know, to me, you know, moving forward, this, you know, I'll give it a real life example from my perspective. You know, the president did announce an energy savings initiative and, you know, the energy savings performance type contract vehicles moving forward. And I think it was like a $2 to $4 billion initiative. And to me, you know, engaging the private sector is going to be the key to the success of that program, consistent with the MythBusters campaign, because just like IT or any, you know, complex buy, you know, being able to benchmark, figure out what, you know, the environment is currently for performance leads to better outcomes, leads to more energy savings, leads to, you know, the right smart investments by industry and the corresponding savings for government and the taxpayer.
Yeah, I will tell you, and I don't want to get ahead of your agenda here, Roger, but in the strategic sourcing effort, one of the things that I think GSA has done particularly well this time is more outreach to vendors and outreach to user agencies. So in a sense, they have demonstrated how well the MythBusters campaign can play in terms of buying smarter so that we all benefit.
Well, Dan, I would tell you, I don't have any agendas, Dan. but now that you mentioned strategic sourcing, why don't we turn there and talk a little bit about that? And yeah, as you mentioned, GSA is playing, you know, the leading role in that. And a lot of the focus has been on the FSS program with, you know, the corresponding, you know, changes in the, you know, purchasing patterns. Can you talk about the acquisition strategy, why, you know, the schedules were looked at as a platform, and I think to GSA's, you know, credit, they've played a leading role.
I do think that GSA has played a leading role. I think that there are many ways in which GSA has changed its behavior in very positive ways. My experience with GSA over these couple of years in our strategic sourcing effort is that they have been listening to vendors and listening to the user agencies. I could give you lots of examples of the way they have changed their approach to be sure that it met the needs of user agencies. I will tell you, when we started down the office supply route, I remember meeting with GSA and with vendors to get a sense of what would work if we were really going to try to push strategic sourcing of office supplies. Because, you know, there were efforts made before this administration, which really didn't succeed. What we've seen in this administration is that the office supply efforts have led to, if I remember the figure correctly, for fiscal 11, something on the order of $199 million of the federal spend went through the 15 blanket purchase agreements that are the FSSI vehicle at GSA.
Just to get the lay of the land, are there four currently ongoing strategic sourcing initiatives? It's the office supplies, right? And
the overnight delivery really began earlier. But again, the problem was it was there, but wasn't being used nearly enough. So we are pushing much harder for it to be used. We have an OFPP. We have meetings that we call ACSTATs, acquisition status meetings, with the agencies. We've just almost finished this round of ACSTATs. We've had one each of these past 2 years. We have two agencies that still haven't had their ACSTATs. Otherwise, we're done. And in the ACSTATs, one of the things we talk about is what percentage, for example, of your overnight delivery, your domestic delivery services are running through the strategic sourcing vehicle. What percentage of your office supplies is running through the strategic sourcing vehicle? The print management is one where the GSA has just awarded the contracts, and the one just over the horizon is wireless, where the RFQ, the solicitation, is on the street today.
You know, just thinking about, you know, the strategic sourcing, do you see that also as an approach to addressing contract duplication?
Absolutely. Steve Van Roekel, the new federal CIO, relatively new, he's been in office now about 4 months, I think. Steve, with whom we work very closely, Steve talks about shared first. The idea is you don't want a component of your agency coming up with the contract and then another component coming up with the contract and a third component coming up with the contract, all for the same thing. You should have one contract shared to avoid contract duplication within your agency to the extent you can. And even better, if you can, we should have a federal contract or a BPA, which is what we've been pushing. You're going to see more of the effort now in the IT space. That's partly the result of our analysis of where the greatest potential is for strategic sourcing moving forward. And it's also the benefit, I think, of the close collaboration between eGov and OFPP and in the agencies between the contracting shops and the IT shops.
Okay, well, and Dan, right now we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy. And when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, the, a little bit more about contract duplication, some of the budget challenges we as a country are facing, and the role procurement is playing in meeting those challenges. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Here's Joseph Klimovich, the CIO at NOAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Sourcefire.
The network capacity, as we try to move large data sets, we're spending a lot of time, effort, and money into improving our network capacity.
Right.
In NOAA, we've got hundreds and hundreds of sites across the country, and if we really want to take advantage of these capabilities at all these sites, we need
gotta to move that data.
Got to move it.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
As you listen to this, hackers from around the world are trying to access your agency's IT network. Don't let your network be compromised by fighting today's cyber threats with yesterday's technology. Government agencies trust Sourcefire's next-generation security to manage cyber threats, control applications, and keep their data safe. Sourcefire provides its customers with agile security to combat today's most sophisticated threats. Download a free next-generation intrusion prevention system white paper at sourcefire.com/federal.
Give the gift of Caps Hockey with a holiday gift pack. Caps holiday gift packs include two tickets to three exciting Caps games, an autographed puck, two Caps hats, and two passes for public skates at the Kepler Capitals Iceplex. There's no better way to celebrate the holidays. For more information on Caps holiday gift packs and to find out how you can win an ultimate Caps holiday experience, call 202-266-CAPS. Text HOLIDAY to 43803 or log on to washingtoncaps.com/holiday.
This holiday season, give the gift that money can't buy. When you donate blood with the American Red Cross, you give the perfect gift. Another hug, another laugh, another smile, another chance to someone in need of blood. And unlike the latest fashion trend, video game, or golf club, the perfect gift costs nothing but an hour of your time. Visit redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to schedule an appointment today. Give the gift of life and help unwrap a lifetime of memories for patients in need.
Hey, Angie. Wow, you did it, didn't you? You went over to...
Mm-hmm. Went to Walmart and got the Pioneer DEH44 HD with built-in HD radio technology.
New HD2, HD3 channels, digital sound quality, and no subscription fees.
You got it. Hey, come on, let's ride. Since the Pioneer DEH44 HD is only $120 at Walmart, I'm taking you out for dinner.
Nice.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 132 years, we've been protecting all military members and their families with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. Get a free quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Fuel cell vehicles promise energy efficiency and less pollution, but the focus has been on using hydrogen as the fuel, and so far there aren't many places to fill up. So why not use gasoline to power fuel cells? Because until now, that's only worked under very high temperatures. But Eric Walksman, University of Maryland engineer, has increased the performance of so-called solid oxide fuel cells to bring the temperature way down, and
that opens them up to running off of gasoline or diesel today, or biofuels in the near term, or hydrogen in the future.
He says the cells, which turn gasoline's chemical energy into electricity without burning, could provide backup power for electric vehicles and replace the internal combustion engine.
It'll still run off the gasoline that you can get at any street corner, but now it'll go three times farther and consume one-third the amount of gasoline and produce one-third the amount of CO2 and produce no emissions.
With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy. And we've been talking about a host of different challenges, issues, you know, fun stuff. If you're one of these, if you're a procurement geek like I am,
me too,
proudly so. And Dan, when we left, we started talking a little bit about contract duplication. And this year, you issued a memo addressing business case development with regard to, you know, when people wanted to create new contract vehicles. Can you talk a little bit about what's in that and what the goals of that policy are?
Absolutely. Without getting into the details, the main goal and the main point is this. If you're an agency and you're thinking of engaging in a big acquisition, you should check first to be sure that there's not some existing vehicle that you can use, whether it's a GWAC, a government-wide acquisition contract, a strategic sourcing vehicle that's already out there, or another agency's IDIQ contract. We simply can't afford to keep creating new contracts for the very same things. That's why Steve Van Rokel's shared first slogan resonates so much with the acquisition community.
And when you look at that, I mean, one of the things that sort of struck me and in terms of business case analysis and put a plug in for the SARA panel, it looked like a lot of the guidance was similar to what the SARA panel did in terms of interagency contracting and recommendations regarding to business case development. Did you look at that, and were there other things you looked at as well?
I had the pleasure of reading the SARA panel's report when I was still at GAO. It is a very important document, and I got to tell you, I think it's as relevant today as it was the day it was issued. There is tons of both information and interesting ideas in it ready to be mined. I will tell you, if I could, that on the issue of interagency contracting, because of problems that existed 7, 8, 9 years ago, GAO put interagency contracting on the high-risk list.
I remember that.
I thought that was the right thing for them to do. I was at GAO at the time, and I agreed with it then, but I also agree with it now. But there have been a lot of changes since then, and I think that agencies have addressed the concerns that GAO had. You remember them, Roger, the lack of clear roles and responsibility for the two agencies, the servicing agency.
Absolutely,
and the using
yes.
agency. There was concern about out-of-scope work being purchased. A number of concerns. Those concerns, although Lord knows we're not perfect, have largely been addressed. And I am hopeful that the next time GAO revises its high-risk series, it's going to conclude that interagency contracting no longer needs to be there. Because I'll tell you, in my opinion, the risk is more from contract duplication from single agency and right. single component contracts and not from interagency contracting.
Okay, and I'm gonna shift gears from a little bit from the and just, you know, strategic sourcing is, you know, an effort to get better, it, you know, to increase efficiency in the procurement system, and a lot of this challenge is also relates to the budget issues that we're facing. Can you talk about a little bit about OMB's goal to reduce managed support service expenditures by 15%
sure.
this fiscal year?
Sure. There are several things we can talk about in terms of the need for more fiscal responsibility, both buying less and buying smarter. But with respect to the management support services, what we learned as we studied the data, and we are data-driven in this, what we learned was management support services were an area where spending had increased particularly fast over the prior 10 years. This is an area where there is a greater than usual risk of over-reliance on contractors and contractors getting into work that is very close to inherently governmental, and a greater than normal risk of the use of time and materials contracts. All of those things came together for us and led us to focus on the need to reduce spending on management support services. And as we finish this round of ACSTATS, I can tell you that agencies are making real progress. We're also focused on the need to avoid leakage, if you will. We don't want there to be a decrease in this area of spending, but an increase in the spending that gets categorized as other. Obviously, that wouldn't be helpful. But we think you're going to see a real meaningful decrease, and it's going to be visible to the whole world because this is FPDS data. There are 12 product and service codes. There were originally 15, but we made some refinements. There were 12 product and service codes. Anybody can get on to FPDS and check to see how we're doing. We're working with the agency, so they'll be getting monthly reports. It's really touching base with them to be sure that they're seeing in FPDS the same thing that we're seeing in FPDS, so that if there are problems, we'll be able to get on top of those problems promptly.
And just along those lines, in terms of those reductions, how in the decision making process at an agency, I assume there's a sensitivity right to whether there's strategic program goals where you do need contractors and how does that all balance out?
We were very concerned, and this is an issue that we heard from the chief acquisition officers, senior procurement executives, that this would be viewed as just our problem. And that's not fair because we're not the users of the management support services. The users are, and not only that, and we're not the ones that control the budgets. So what we've done is this. We've done broader outreach that goes beyond the CAO community and the SPE community. For example, Danny Werfel, the controller at OMB, and I jointly sent a memo about the need to reduce spending on management support services and providing guidance. And that memo went to the CFO community as well as the acquisition community. That shared understanding is helpful. And in fact, without naming particular agencies, I'm thinking of one civilian agency that told us they've had significant success in reducing spending on management support services. And it's primarily because the users decided to cut back on the programs. So that there was an actual decision to spend less on the program overall. And in that case, and because of that, they didn't need the support services as much.
Okay, and I'm going to try to get, I do have an agenda, Dan, and get through a bunch of different topics.
But can I squeeze
sure.
in one more thought?
Oh,
I
sure.
can't resist. Our agencies deserve credit for all the things they're doing. GAO wrote a report a few years ago saying that agencies too often buy goods and services off the schedules, negotiate blanket purchase agreements, BPAs, without getting any discount. One of the great things we heard during the ACSTATS was agency after agency, when they're buying management support services through BPAs under the schedules, are now negotiating discounts. It's a real change in behavior that reflects well on our acquisition workforce.
And that's, I mean, that takes advantage of the framework of the schedules program. That's the way it's sort of designed to work. That, you know, in the statutory imperative for competition for orders over $150,000, and you know, getting those additional discounts. And actually, now we're up hard against the break, Dan. So we have one more segment to go. Right now we will take a break. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Previously on the Fed's telework panel discussion, sponsored by HP and Intel, Danette Campbell, the senior advisor of telework at USPTO, spoke to the current state of telework at USPTO.
Our existing telework program provides us with the ability to continue some everyday business operations during an emergency beyond those that are defined in the COOP plan. And during this February 2010 snowstorm, our Trademark Assistance Center continued to answer public inquiries better, actually, than the average performance for the previous quarter.
Work is something you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Feds Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you missed the Feds Telework panel discussion on Federal News Radio, you can listen on demand at fedstelework.com on the issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. fedstelework.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Dan Gordon. Dan is the administrator for federal procurement policy, at least till the end of the month. And Dan, you know, one of the things that you know, the executive branch is in the midst of implementing is the Small Business Jobs Act of 2010. In particular, you know, there's aspects of it that deal with multiple award contracts and small business set-asides. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The provision you're talking about, as you know, is Section 1331. It authorizes agencies to set aside orders, and it also authorizes a couple of other things like reserves and partial set-asides. But setting aside orders is a very important area. It is a challenging area, not a simple thing. The advocates of our small businesses, and in many ways I am an advocate of our small businesses, think that it's very important to allow agencies to set aside task and delivery orders for small businesses. But there are also many people that have concern that this could cause problems, that it could have unintended consequences, which might redound to no one's benefit and certainly not to the benefit of the small businesses. That's why the FAR Council decided to issue an interim regulation, which just echoes the language of the statute itself. It is, and you know, Roger, that what the statute said is that agencies may, at their discretion, set aside, etc. That's essentially what the interim reg says. The Small Business Administration will be issuing proposed regulations that give far more guidance and have far more detail, but will also have lots of questions because we need this to be a transparent process. There are many stakeholders, and in my view, there is an honest debate in this area about what the right degree of discretion is, what the right degree of, let's say, compulsion is.
Yeah, and you know, from my perspective, I think discretion is the key. In particular, the GSA schedules over the last decade has been I have to admit, I worked at GSA, so I have a view, but I think it's been one of the most, if not the most successful small business contracting program out there, with well over one third of the dollar volume going to small businesses. And I think the key to that was the flexibility of the program, the streamlined nature of the orders, and the opportunities that it provides small businesses. So
that gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, discretion is the better part of valor.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and now let's, you know, we touch a little bit on that. And again, I guess, as I confess, I do have an agenda. And one of the things I did want to talk to you a little bit about, and you started our conversation, we started the conversation a little bit about the acquisition workforce as the key challenge you saw when you came into OFPP. Can you talk a little bit about where we are in terms of the skill set, the demographics of the acquisition workforce?
Everybody that hears from me, whether it's on the Hill, in the press, out of the agencies, meetings with industry, they all hear me say that the acquisition workforce has been my number one priority. We have made significant progress. That's true in terms of numbers, where you see increases of roughly 6 to 12%, varying by agency. In terms of the number of 1102s, that is true. In terms of training has gotten better. The new leadership of Katrina McFarlane in the Defense Acquisition University and Donna Jenkins at the Federal Acquisition Institute, working with people like Lisa Doyle up at VA's Acquisition Academy in Frederick and the other agency training centers, have really increased the focus on quality training. We've got a long ways to go. You know, I used to be a high school teacher, and I care a lot about training. Training needs to be timely, it needs to be understandable, and it needs to be practical. I think we have made progress, but in my view, every time we put out a new FAR rule, there should be training ready to go when that FAR rule goes out so that our people know how to implement it. Have we made progress? I think so, but I am very concerned that the budget pressures on the Hill are going to put much of that progress at risk. We need to protect the acquisition workforce. The good news is this is not a partisan issue. You probably know, Roger, that I had a hearing up on the Hill, which I guess will be my last hearing, at least as administrator, a few weeks ago in front of the relevant subcommittee of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And both the chairman, the Republican chairman, Chairman Lankford, and the ranking minority member, a Democrat, Jerry Connolly, they were on the same side of this issue. We have got to strengthen the federal acquisition workforce because, as one of them said, this is an area where you risk doing penny-wise, pound-foolish.
Absolutely. Now we have just a few minutes left, and I wanted to, ask you some bigger picture questions, sort of just get your thoughts. And, you've had a long and distinguished career in federal procurement. You worked in private practice and at GAO, where I became familiar with you in the bid protest area, and now at OFPP. Have you thought about, just looking back on that career, to date, what do you see as the biggest, changes in the procurement system over the last couple decades?
I will tell you, the good news is that although I'm technically retiring from the federal government at the end of this month, I'm not retiring from the federal procurement process. And I want to stay, obviously, fully engaged at GW Law School as the Associate Dean for Procurement Law. But when I look back, I see dramatic changes to the procurement system, the shift from IFBs to RFPs, the shift from individual contracts to interagency contracts, the shift to IDIQs, and your listeners are familiar with all the acronyms,
absolutely.
So you'll forgive me. You see that change. You see the change of our people being having the numbers run down, as I talked about early in the show today, fewer and fewer acquisition professionals, not enough investment. You see us really turning the corner 3 years ago in terms of correcting that. You saw the tsunami of spending with this administration putting the brakes on it. So we had the first decrease in spending on contracting for more than 12 years. But I got to tell you, the bedrock for me is that we have a professional acquisition corps, and I very much include the lawyers who I'll be working more with going forward and helping train. I include the lawyers as part of that acquisition corps, but we have a professional acquisition corps that protects our system. It is, in my opinion, the number one reason that we have far less corruption in our procurement system than most countries have. We have a system of transparency. We have competition and open competition as the bedrock of our system, and we have a professional acquisition corps to protect the system and be sure that the system is carried out the way it's supposed to be carried out.
Right. And I'll give you one last question. Do you have any final thoughts as you head to GW for the acquisition community, in particular the federal acquisition workforce?
I would say that it has been for me an enormous honor to serve in this capacity. At the end of the day, sometimes in the evening, I walk out of the White House complex over to Pennsylvania Avenue, and I'm always tempted, and I often give in to the temptation, to turn around just before I get to the gate and look at the White House all lit up, one of the most beautiful sights in the world. And I just want to pinch myself that I had this enormous honor to serve here. I will also tell you that it's with very mixed emotion that I'm going to be moving away from the non-lawyer part of the acquisition workforce and focusing on the lawyers. I love working with lawyers, but it has been a huge pleasure and honor to work with contracting officers, contract specialists, CORs, SPEs, and the leadership in the agencies over my tenure.
Well, and it's always been a pleasure for me to work with you, and I want to thank you for your service.
Thank you, Roger.
And to close the show, I want to thank Dan Gordon, Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy, for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.